So ask me what I did yesterday.
So Blair, what did you do yesterday?
Let me tell you. Thank you so much for asking.
Welcome. What happened?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. I'm Blair.
And I'm Kirsten, and we are
Mediocre Content.
And how often do you read the intro?
I mean, I look at it.
Just
I feel like
sure.
I look at it to prompt me for what I'm going to say, but then it's like muscle memory after that.
For sure, for sure, for sure.
Yeah.
I like that.
Because I feel like if I'm not looking at it, it's going to be like, hi, this is Blair, and I'm Kirsten, and da, 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 and this is a podcast.
Woo! I mean,
yeah.
In fairness, that's the cliff notes of the intro. You
it's
did a
true.
Really good job with
Thank
the
you.
cliff notes.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Well, we are being uncharacteristically productive.
We are.
Today.
This is being recorded many moons. Well, not
like,
many moons,
like
but
seven
a few moons before.
A handful of moons prior.
Seven Lincoln memorials before.
These are exact measurements, guys.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Units
before
of measurements.
This podcast gets released. Yep.
Let's hope my mic is kinder today. I don't have as much to say
yeah.
today, but still.
That's true.
All
That's
the
true.
same.
Yeah, so we're on board. I think when this podcast comes out, the following weekend will be cookie weekend for me, which
Oh.
means that I am going to be making an insurmountable amount of cookies in my kitchen of variety of types.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pushing myself this year and doing two new types of cookies that I've never done before.
Blair.
I typically just do sugar cookies. And then I do, which don't even really count as cookies, to be honest, the, not the sugar cookies, but the,
sugar cookies
the,
do not count.
The, no, they absolutely do. But the ones that, the pretzel with the Rolo and the M&M on
oh,
top.
Oh, yeah.
Those little, like, treats,
that totally
I guess.
Counts. Yeah.
I'm doing those for the neighbors. Shout out,
okay.
Neighbors. And then I'm also going to do Christmas kitchen sink cookies. So it's going to be, and kitchen sink cookies typically have, like, whatever you have in the pantry, right? So, like,
correct.
They have nuts, chocolate, potato chips, and, like,
interesting.
Yeah, and pretzels. And just, it's like a sweet and salty, like, lovely situation. I'm excited to try. I think we like the kitchen sink cookies from Panera. So I'm excited to try that. And then I'm also doing gingerbread for the first time.
Oh, very fancy.
Yeah. And I didn't realize that gingerbread has molasses in it.
It does.
Which is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I want it to be like soft and chewy and not like the hard, like used
yeah.
for construction gingerbread. So I think this will be good.
We're not building houses, people.
We're not. We're
just
literally
indulging.
Just eating for fun. Right.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Tyler
yeah.
loves molasses cookies. I hate them.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Yeah. No.
I mean, I think I've never really had them.
Yeah.
I don't think. I've had a gingerbread cookie before, but I've never had like a true like soft molasses cookie.
Grandma makes them every year. God bless her. I could not be bothered. I will stick
yeah.
with the chocolate chip and the sugar cookie. I can't.
It's too, is it too sweet or just the texture?
I don't like the taste of molasses very much.
That's fair.
Honestly. Like they,
yeah.
they're soft, but
yeah.
the taste is not where it's at.
Are you like a cinnamony nutmeg kind of person or no,
no,
not really. Not a Christmas spice kind of lady.
No, not a Christmas
Okay.
spice. I am spicy, but
that's correct.
Not in my cookies.
That's fair. We'll take that. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, we were just discussing Christmas shopping or holiday
yes.
shopping for those that don't
yes.
celebrate Christmas. I'm getting closer to the end of my list. Hopefully all of you are as well. I know it can be a very difficult season. So just take your time and breathe. It's okay.
Yes. And this episode, just as a quick disclaimer before we move right along, it is kind of off topic. It's not like holiday, you know,
sure.
necessarily. However, I think it's a valuable, like, I like learning about fashion brands. I think it's
yeah.
fun. But then also, I think if you're looking for a reasonably priced.
Yes.
I use that lightly.
Yes.
Designer bag.
Yes.
This is probably the way you want to go, yes. just in terms of quality.
Agreed.
However, I recognize that like everybody is has a different financial scenario.
Yes.
Do with this information what you will. This is not an advertisement in any way. It's just like a fun learning about the history of the brand. Okay.
Coach
okay.
is my go-to, man.
Literally.
Such cute designs. Yeah. And Coachtopia now has really cute stuff.
Yeah.
And outlet. That's the other thing. If you want to find some luxury stuff or a semi-luxury stuff, do the outlets, man. You can do it online too. It's really nice.
Yeah. I have two Coach bags and I love them so much. And they're like made to be worn. Like it's not like you have to put them up on a pedestal and like just look at them.
Yes.
You know, they're very durable, which is nice.
Agreed.
Go ahead.
I was just saying, with that said, we're not experts.
No, we're definitely not. Obviously, you have come to this podcast to get any kind of advice. We are not a financial podcast. We are not a shopping podcast. Like, do not, I don't even know. Is shopping podcast a real thing? Probably. I don't know.
New venture.
we are not the place to like, you know, we're not trying to influence you to buy anything. We're just giving you information. Okay. We want you to do your own research if you feel like this with any topic, you know, if you feel like this is something that's applicable to you, we want you to make sure that you do your own research and your due diligence in your own time because we care and we want you to make the right decisions for you.
We scare because we care.
Yes. Monsters, Inc.
Woo!
Speaking of scaring, Kirsten is going to talk about black holes now for a brief moment in time. Please fast forward if you are going to have an existential crisis like I am most certainly am.
Look, this is literally because you didn't want me to drop it in a pod like I did previously. So this is to make up for dropping it in the middle of the pod however many episodes ago.
That's fair.
I'm just circling back. What else is circling is the James Webb Space Telescope. And that's the reason that we have these lovely pictures of what is beautifully named the Sombrero Galaxy. And if you remember when I did dump it in your lap, however long ago, I described that this galaxy is very cylindrical in shape, like it's on its side. And it's this huge circular pattern with the black hole being at the center of it, which is why it's a little concerning.
Yeah.
But this is important for visualization. So the Sombrero Galaxy appears to be kind of different overall in nature when seen in visible light, which is what these amazing telescopes allows us to do because there's no light in space. The galactic core in the center whites out the inner disk while the outer disk roils with dust and gas, which is pretty typical for any galaxy that you're going to see, including ours. But when seen under the mid-infrared view of the Webb telescope, this galaxy is also known as Messier 104 or M104. The core doesn't shine at all and instead reveals a smooth inner disk. Very interesting. The sharp resolution of the Webb's MIRI, which is that infrared instrument, also brings into focus the galaxy's outer ring, providing insights to how the dust, which is an essential building block for astronomical objects in the universe, is distributed within the outer rings. It appeared smooth, kind of like a blanket from the imaging NASA retired from the Spitzer Space Telescope. And this time, in the image provided by the Webb telescope, it actually shows clumps, like very intricately organized throughout the disk area. Researchers say that these clumpy nature pieces of dust detects carbon-containing molecules, which is huge. Sorry if you can hear my work computer. Called polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, which is a mouthful. And basically all they do is indicate a young star forming region. Also important. However, Unlike other galaxies studied by the Webb, the Sombrero Galaxy is not a particular hotbed in general for star formation, and the rings of this galaxy produce less than one solar mass of stars per year compared to the Milky Way, which is roughly two solar masses a year. So it's kind of a big difference overall.
Yeah.
Even the supermassive black hole at the center
Yes.
of the galaxy
Yes.
is overall very docile compared to the other. Okay, I'm just telling you the facts.
That's
okay?
what they say.
We're petting kittens with this one, okay? It's very calm.
Okay, but it's called a supermassive black hole.
Okay, but it's basically a baby, okay?
Just a baby.
It's just a baby. It's also known as an active galactic nucleus because it is found at the center of the galaxy. Despite it being a bit hefty at 9 billion solar masses, it is technically classified as a low luminosity nucleus. So it's not a big deal, is I guess what I'm trying to say, which is technically what I said in the drop it in your lap episode as well.
I know. Okay.
Also within the galaxy are about 2,000 globular clusters, which are collections of hundreds of thousands of old stars held together by gravity. Gravity. This type of system serves as a pseudo laboratory for astronomers to study thousands of stars within one system.
Wait.
With Sorry. The same age.
I need to confirm, was that Gravity by John Mayer or Gravity by Elphaba? Divine Gravity by Elf.
Divine Gravity.
Okay, good. I just couldn't tell. It was like very ambiguous.
Thank you.
It was very good though.
Anyway, well, I appreciate that. It's an intriguing opportunity because they can use these clusters of stars, which are uncharacteristically all together in one place, to compare not just within the galaxy, but also to, of course, other galaxy stars that have since retired. And the different colors of the background galaxies can also tell astronomers about properties, like how far away they are, which is important because the other point that I made was that even though technically it is close with huge air quotes to Earth, it is still 30 million light years away in the constellation of Virgo. So it's close, but not close enough to be concerned. That's I just wanted to remedy all of that.
Sure.
Thank You're
you for
welcome.
Clearing that up, Kirsten. Yeah. Me and the other people with existential crises about the galaxies appreciate that.
What can I say except you're welcome.
You're welcome.
We're going to turn this pod into a musical real fast.
Defying gravity.
It's all the rage right now. Okay, the other one that I have is called Don't Be Salty. And it has to do with our new efforts to successfully desalinize seawater.
Yay.
Yay. So seawater evaporates. Let me back up. Let me try it again. A novel approach to making seawater evaporate faster has been hailed as a significant breakthrough in the desalinization technology that will, of course, benefit everyone because we're going to have access to make not fresh water, fresh water. Up to,
because
right
now, the fresh water is mildly polluted. No big deal.
And also mildly receding. No big deal.
Also that.
Up to 36% of the world's 8 billion people currently suffer from severe freshwater shortages for at least 4 months of the year. Obviously, that is dependent on where you are, what your rainy season is, how you collect it, blah, blah, blah. This could also potentially increase to 75% by 2050, which is technically right around the corner. Seawater desalination is one of the most effective strategies to try and alleviate this current scarcity, but existing processes consume huge amounts of energy and leave a really substantial carbon footprint, which kind of backtracks the success of desalinizing the water. You know? And then I choked. It's all the salt in the
breathe,
air.
Breathe, Kirsten, breathe. Whew.
Other problems plague the production of fresh water from the sea, including the necessity to descale membranes used in the reverse osmosis desalination process with chemicals that are unfortunately toxic to sea life. Also kind of a backpedal from success. Furthermore, once the water is produced through this process, the briny byproduct is so overly rich in salt that it has the effect of an ecological contaminant. So we're doing a huge disservice to the environment, ironically, by trying to get fresh water out of the environment. Not great.
Not great.
But researchers from the University of South Australia have already demonstrated the potential of solar-powered evaporation as an energy-efficient and sustainable alternative to current methods. Of course, they are still limited by a lower evaporation rate for seawater compared to pure water due to the negative effects of salt ions on water evaporation. The materials the science researchers have now collaborated using Professor Howland Zhu, hopefully yes, that's the right name, and other researchers from China on a project to develop a simple yet effective strategy to kind of reverse this limitation, which would be super helpful, of course, by introducing inexpensive and common clay materials such as zeolite and bentonite into a floating photothermal hydrogel evaporator. Wow. The team achieved seawater evaporation rates that were 18.8% higher than pure water. Success. There is a significant breakthrough since previous studies all found seawater evaporation rates near the 8% lower than pure water. So not only is this process better than pure water evaporation, it exceeds the pure water evaporation. So we're not even breaking even. So that's great. We're going above and beyond. The researchers say the hydrogel evaporator maintained its performance even after months of immersion in seawater, which is great because that means it doesn't really have a short shelf life either in terms of overall productivity once you start using it. Because if you don't know anything about salt water, it can corrode things, it can rust things because of the high concentration of salt, which is a huge problem, obviously, when you're trying to use it over and over again. Considering the global desalinization market numbers around 21,000 operational plants worldwide, even small declines in the desalination performance can result in the loss of tens of millions of tons of clean water. Fossil fuels are what power most of the current plants. And of course, experimental machines trying to decarbonize the industry have used solar power and mechanical energy to try and use the waves as an option. Mm-hmm. So this is huge. This is a very big kind of explosion into this field that is obviously somewhat successful, being that it's 18% higher than just pure water in general, mm-hmm, but also appears to have somewhat of a longevity to it in terms of its construction. So that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Anyway, that's the good news. See, I fixed the black hole problem and you now have fresh drinking water.
I don't know if you fixed the black hole problem.
I think my best.
You made it less scary, I think.
Well, that's an achievement in and of itself then.
I agree. Everyone, please hold while Kirsten does work. She is not at work, technically, but she is doing work.
I don't know what you're talking about.
As far as we know, Kirsten had the day off today.
Yeah. You know, it's fine. Technically, it's past my lunch break, so that's not helpful either.
No.
I've been busy, okay?
Look, we're honest and we don't judge. Or what is it?
We listen and we don't judge.
That's right.
My brain says that about as much as it says, thank you, Kateki. No.
That girl is crazy.
I love her so much. I know that it's
crazy.
I've been debunked that she's actually rich, but like she owns all the stores or something. I don't know. It's like whatever.
Oh.
Did you not hear about that?
No, I don't. Oh. I mean, I was on it for a brief moment in time and then I was off.
I have not seen her for a while since hockey season started for obvious reasons. But when I was watching her, everyone was like, oh my gosh, the bags are empty. You can tell she's not taking anything. Nobody just walks in and says, I'll take everything, blah, blah, blah. Well, it was actually a whole thing where she actually owns the stores that she goes to, and it's essentially an advertisement for all of the stuff they have
Have.
in the store that you can go and
Oh,
purchase. And so,
interesting.
yeah, so she shows you the
Smart.
collection, and then she's like,
Right.
I'll take it all because it's all, you know, great. And she's like, look at how wonderful the store is, and hopefully you'll go to the store. So anyway, that's the whole
She's onto
Genius. She
something. She's onto
is.
something. I love
That's
it.
pretty smart.
And the character of Katiki,
Oh.
the best.
When he's not in the video, everyone's like, excuse me, that is not Kateki.
Right.
Where is Kateki? anyway.
All right. Well,
Speaking of luxury.
speaking of luxury, not quite that luxurious, but you know.
Exactly.
So I'm going to start with how Coach describes their story on their own website, because I think
Okay.
that's the best place to start.
Fair enough.
So, as told by the Coach website,
As told by Ginger.
Coach is a global fashion house founded in New York in 1941. So it's an American brand inspired by the vision of creative director Stuart Viviers, the inclusive and courageous spirit of our hometown. We make beautiful things crafted to last for you to be yourself in.
Aww.
Coach began with the dream to handcraft leather into beautiful, clever, practical things, founded in New York in 1941 by six artisans. The house grew under the vision of Lillian and Miles Kahn, who became the original American House of Leather.
One
Yes, ma'am.
note, Coach.
Yes.
I love the idea. I love the framing. I have yet to find a use for the leather bear key charm outside of being
It's self-expression, Kirsten. It's
exponentially
self-expression.
okay. Sorry, sorry.
It's cute. That's
is
why.
cute.
Anyway. All right. So after that, then came Bonnie Cashin, hired by Miles Kahn in 1962 to be Coach's first lead designer, with Bonnie's fearless vision of color, proportion, and quirk, and her love of doing, Coach transformed into the perfect reflection of modern freedom and equality, the attitude of the 60s New York. In the decades that followed, Coach opened its first store on Madison Avenue and transformed from a family-run leather goods company into a fashion house known around the world for its distinct attitude and lifestyle collections inspired by New York. Today, as in 1941, we are shaped by our unique story and committed in everything we do to celebrating craft, our hometown, and the optimism of authentic American style, bringing an appreciation for American pop culture and the love of craftsmanship to Coach. Stuart Viviers has been reimagining the heritage of our house since 2013, inspired by the inclusive and courageous spirit of New York. His free-spirited collections have introduced Coach to a new generation. G Links, get off the keyboard.
He literally put his whole butt on the
I know.
keyboard.
I was like, oh God, he's gonna delete it. Oh
Oh
God.
God, here we go. Oh.
Okay. So, side note, in 2017, Stuart Viviers was awarded the Accessory Designer of the Year Award by the Council of Fashion Designers of America and Designer of the Year Award by American Apparel and Footwear Association for his work at Coach.
Yeah.
So that's like the blurb on the website. Minus the 2017 fun fact. I just like threw that in there because there wasn't like a good
No,
place
that's
to put
fair.
that. Yeah, so that's the vibes. It's New York, it's practical, it's, fine leather goods. Treat
Yeah,
yourself. No.
treat yourself. That's right.
So now Lynx is so cute. Oh
I'm
my
sorry. He
God.
just wants to be
Ah,
held.
that's
Usually,
fine.
when I work, he has the freedom to kind of be like, yeah, now is chest time. But obviously, we are in the middle of something.
Yeah. You see plastic goblin back there.
Oh,
just
Jinx
eating
and
away.
Lynx tearing up the whole pod.
The whole pod. Also, Jinx has decided that the tree, like the bottom branches are of the Christmas tree, are good for like nom noms.
Oh,
so
love.
He loves a little like mouth feel every night.
What that mouth do?
Literally.
Oh boy.
Anyway.
Ew.
Moving forward. This podcast is not about cats. It is cat adjacent, but it is not
always
about
cats.
All right. So the timeline, we're going to start in 1941. Obviously, we know Coach is founded. Six artisans in New York came together in a loft back in 1941. And they originally had handmade wallets and billfolds out of leather. And while profitable, the brand thrived relatively quietly. And after a few years in business, Lillian and Miles Kahn, which were two experts in the leather goods industry at the time, joined the company and led the operation to its success. Miles was responsible for improving the products, processing the leather similarly to how a baseball glove leather was processed, thus making it softer and more durable. Lillian, on the other hand, designed the brand's first women's handbag.
Nice.
Okay. The couple then went on to buy Coach in 1961, and from there, the affordable luxury label grew to the brand you know and love today, with a little help from some rock stars in the space along the way. From 1962 to 1974, is the next like little time frame we're going to talk about. In 1962, Miles hired legendary designer Bonnie Cashin to front a woman's accessories account under the Coach Men's Accessory Company, Gale Leather. Cashin designed multiple Coach signatures, including the label's renowned brass keyturn hardware and the bucket bag and a zip top tote, roomy enough to fit a second smaller handbag inside. She left the brand in 1974.
Oh, come on.
I know. Quote, Cashin was the designer who started the movement of carrying two bags to work. Jeannie adjunct assistant professor in accessories design at the Fashion Institute of Technology, told Fashionista.
Nice.
Quote, it was definitely for busy working women. If she carried two bags, that woman was working outside the home, and Cashin believed that women had so many roles, one bag wasn't enough. Which is fair. I mean, we definitely see today.
Right.
People talk about the bag lady, you know, you have your lunchbox, your purse, your work bag, like the whole thing, right?
Yep. It's true.
So from 1965 to 1985, Coach started rising in popularity. Richard Rose joined the Coach family in 1965, stepping into the role of executive vice president. Rose is responsible for getting Coach to the placement it needed in department stores, giving the brand a new level of exposure and status. He also is credited as being the Louis Frankford's mentor. And Louis Frankford, I know you're all wondering, who is that?
I am.
He joined Coach in 1979 as its vice president of business development. And under his direction, the first Coach flagship opened on Madison Avenue in 1985. So they're a relatively new brand, I feel, in that way, because they didn't have like a brick and mortar store until 1985.
Right.
The same year that Miles and Lillian Kahn would sell the brand to the American consumer goods company, Sara Lee.
Like the cake person. Oh, I like that, actually.
So from 1985 to 2001, we see that Sara Lee acquires Coach. Yes, the one with the desserts.
Were there dessert-themed, like, bags?
I don't think so. I think it was just under the same corporation.
What a missed opportunity.
I know. It might have come as a surprise. Out of all the corporations the Kahn family could have sold their fashion house to, they settled on Sara Lee. But it turns out the age-old saying opposites attract is kind of true. Under new ownership with the Frankfurt's vision of the company, Coach sales flourished.
Of course.
In 1996, Frankfurt became the chairman and CEO of Coach and brought the designer Reed Krakoff as president and executive creative director. Together, the two enhanced Coach merchandise to be functional and stylish. This shift catapulted the brand to fame and wealth. Krakow's image drove the brand's sales from 500 million to 5 billion. Jeez. And that's in 1996.
That's crazy growth.
In 2001, Coach cut ties with Sara Lee so that it could become its own entity. I know. No more cake.
For real.
So it became Coach Inc., which eventually became Tapestry Inc. in 2017.
Like, as in right now, it's technically Tapestry Inc.?
I think so. Probably because they acquired some new brands under the Coach umbrella. So they didn't want it to be just Coach.
Right? Okay. All right.
I don't know. I'm assuming that. I have no factual basis for that. In 2013 to the present, Coach's rebranding, basically, for what we grew up with, is what you know Coach for now.
Okay.
For people our age, this is the era of the Coach bag, right? So Krakow stayed with Coach for 16 years before stepping down to pursue a namesake line of women's accessories. He was succeeded by Stuart Vaviers, the former creative director of Mulberry. And Mulberry is a Scottish brand, I believe, and they do really good leather handbags as well. And it's very cute. I love it. Director of Mulberry's from 2004 to 2007, and Low, which is another like mid-tier fashion brand, from 2007 to 2013, who had also worked in the accessories departments of brands from Calvin Klein to Givenchy.
So yeah, it's in the family.
So that's kind of where we are now. We're going to talk about, before we take a little break, we're going to talk about Coach's best-selling products.
Oh, I'm so excited for this. Are we going to talk about like our preferences as well?
We can. Yeah, we definitely can. I'm going to talk about the ones that are like the best-selling and the ones that are, I mean, I don't, I'll say it in a little bit. But like, these are the ones that people like the most.
Sure.
Whether you like them or whether we like them or not is.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So Coach is best known as an affordable luxury brand specializing in leather goods. Yeah, we know. Okay. But the most popular products are by far its bags. Specifically, the brand's top two bestsellers are the Willow Saddle Bag and Soft Tabby Hobo Bag. Now, the saddle bag, for Kirsten, I have a reference photo. It's a cute little like under the arm purse. You know, it doesn't hold more than like a wallet and a phone.
Sure. Sure.
But it's a cute little vibe. And I think in the early 2000s and now, because the early 2000s, for some reason, the girlies want the style back. And I don't understand that at all, but whatever.
Yeah.
I'm elderly.
Geriatric.
The tiny little purse under the arm was like a vibe. And I participated. I know about it. It was not my favorite era. I am a crossbody or big bag person. I am not a small, tiny, look at my little purse with my little dog person.
I am that's just my fanny pack kind of fanny pack worn as a side bag.
Yes.
Is where I'm at now.
So crossbody, sort of.
So crossbody, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember the ones that had the little initial on them that kind of looked like that way back when? Were you part of that trend?
The what?
They were like tiny little bags, kind of like this one, but instead of the flap that this one has, it just had a zipper on the top and it had your initial and like the big letter.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
okay. Oh, yeah. I did not have one of those, but they were all the rage.
Yeah. And they were like at Limited 2 or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, Limited 2.
Yeah. I did have the little tiny bag with like the cargo flaps.
Cargo pant flaps.
No, yeah. So, but they were pockets on the front. So,
I did not have one of those either. I also wanted those like really sparkly bags with the giant sequins on them, but I didn't get that either, which is fair.
Did I have one of those?
They were in every color you could possibly imagine, and then some. And I feel like a lot of the girls went on vacation and like obtained one.
Yeah.
And then they came back and it was like, whoa.
I feel like I also wanted one, but I don't think I ever had one.
Yes, I was in the same boat.
I had earrings that had like the same like little iridescent like circles.
Earrings I was on board with. Yeah. Yes.
I had some wild earrings.
For real.
Okay. All right.
Claire's was the place, man.
Right? Oh my God. Oh my
Sorry,
God. I got my first ear piercing at
Me
Claire's.
Too.
Yeah. Because yeah.
Don't even get me started on the cartilage piercing. That was a mistake. It's still in though.
I didn't so after I so I got my first two like earlobe piercings at Claire's.
Yes.
And then after that, my friend who had more like ear piercings than I did, I was telling her I wanted my cartilage pierced. She's like, don't go to a place where they use the gun because
yeah.
you can get, what is it called?
It's keloids?
Like, yeah. Keloids, yeah. I think is what it is. And so she was like, go to a tattoo parlor. I know it's kind of scary, but like go. Cause I was like, what, 18 at the time. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't know about
trust.
Tattoos.
Yeah. Trust and believe. I went to Claire's and got my cartilage pierced and that gun got stuck in my ear and it wouldn't retract.
Girl.
It was a whole episode. But you know what? That cartilage piercing is strong to this day.
She has
had the least
you.
Problems.
Yeah. Yeah. But since then, I've only ever gotten it at tattoo parlors because they know what they're doing. And it's like sterile and, you know, the whole thing.
That's where I got my nose pierced. It was great.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So the pink saddlebag.
Very cute.
As we like get back on track. The pink saddlebag, the first style to come to mind when we think coach is the saddle. So this is like their main event here.
Mm-hmm.
It was introduced to the market in 1971 and it saw a surge of popularity in the 1980s when again, and then again in the early aughts, right? Mm-hmm. So the early 2000s, right?
Yes.
While the style isn't always necessarily trendy, it continues to be a brand bestseller.
It's a simple, very like this
regular
picture,
purse.
Right. And this picture has it in bright bubblegum pink, but they make this bag in so many neutral colors that it's just a basic bag. And it looks like, if I'm not mistaken, this one may also provide an option for a side bag kind of deal. So if you don't want to wear it under your arm, you don't have to either. So versatile, compact, a multitude of color options, usually, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
I get it. It's not one that I would own, but it is a very universal bag if you were going to invest in one.
It is. Yeah, I agree. So, there's that. Hold on 1 second. I'm like looking.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say something else and I can't remember what it was.
I've derailed you once again.
You have derailed me once again. Foiled.
Foiled again.
All right. So the second most popular is the tote bag, which for obvious reasons, you just throw your stuff in there and it is what it is, right? The one that I have as an example for Kirsten is that iconic pattern where they have all the little coach C's
very
together.
Yes.
And controversial yet brave opinion, I hate this design. I think it's ugly.
Yes.
And when this was the primary design in like the mid 2010s, I wanted nothing to do with it. I thought it was ugly. I've decided as a person, I don't love the idea of wearing like branded merch. I think it's just not, it's fine if that's what you like to do. And I think in like good, like amounts, it's fine, but it's just not my vibe. Like I would rather people come up to me and ask me where I bought my thing instead of them automatically knowing, cause there's a giant Chanel logo on my t-shirt.
Agreed.
You know?
No. I think I have the same problem. My problems were it was always brown and I never had anything that went with brown that I was wearing. And it was such a, like, it's a neutral color. And like now as an adult, yes, I will incorporate tans and different camo colored things.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree with you. I think it was too busy on the eyes, an unpopular color as a teen. And also, I also dislike having a bunch of letters everywhere. I'm a solid kind of give me a wash of color and then be done. Yeah. With that said, I do have a mini bag side saddle coach that is black, that has the black logo C's, but it's behind a star print. So I felt justified.
Okay. Yeah.
It was subtle enough.
That's fair. That's fair.
This I would not wear out.
No.
What you have here,
yeah,
I would not wear out.
It's just not a vibe. I don't know. And I know, and now Coach is like back in the algorithm, and they just came out with a huge line of bags.
I want
and
the bow
none
one.
of them, what, which one?
The bow one.
Oh yeah. So cute. They, and now they have not come out with anything that I've seen with the C logo pattern. And I'm so glad, because all of their bags are beautiful shaped. Like they're, the bones of the bag is like perfect. The sizing is good. The quality is good. I just hate the pattern that they were using. So now that it's all like solid, like, and different colors of leather, it's beautiful. And I would buy them over and over again. So
great.
I'm glad that we kind of got out of that.
Oh yes. Oh yes.
So then the last one we'll talk about, which is the third bestseller, is the tabby. And it's very similar to the saddlebag. It's a little bit bigger and more like rectangular shaped, but it's still the same, like over the shoulder mini bag kind of thing. The one that I have for Kirsten is in metallic silver, which is,
I love it,
a vibe. But
really do.
Yeah. So it's casual or formal, dress up or down. This is like their, you know, utilitarian, you can wear it anywhere kind of thing. And I would say that's probably true as well for the saddlebag, but this one's just like slightly bigger and a more classic shape, I feel.
Agreed.
So yeah, Coach today, thanks to its quality, craftsmanship, affordability, and partnerships with celebrities and with TikTok, Coach is one of the most sought after purchased brands today under the leadership of creative director Stuart Viviers. The fashion powerhouse continues to evolve and stay ahead of the curve, surprising and delighting consumers and fangirls alike with everything from repurposed Coachtopia bags to whimsical spring-summer collection to seasonal trends like tiny satchels and wearing two bags at once. We can't wait to see what the brand comes up with next.
Now, I will say one of the cool things that I've seen on TikTok, you know, Coach with TikTok, are the ones that they go to these thrift stores and they just happen upon old vintage Coach bags. This,
I know exactly which person you're talking about. And I don't know where she's going shopping.
It's but crazy.
It's crazy. She just happens. It's always vintage Coach. And
always
in our next section, this is a lovely segue. Thank you so much, Kirsten.
You're so welcome.
In the next section, we're going to talk about like how you can tell which decade your Coach bag is from / how you can tell if it's real.
That's perfect.
So we'll save that for the next. And then we'll talk about like the bags we have and the bags we like and So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll do that. Okay, bye.
Hey, man, did you hear Mediocre Content Podcast has more social platforms now?
Whoa, no way. What do they need those for? I thought they barely had an email.
Not sure, but they gotta be Delulu if they think that many people are trying to find them.
Exactly. Well, I guess we should play into their delusion then. Here are the ways you can contact the NCP host, you know, if you really want to.
Connect with NCP on Gmail, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Twitch, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you want to listen to podcasts.
Or you can find all of their contacts by visiting Linktree/mediocre content podcast.
Now, good luck in the second half of the pod. You'll need it.
Welcome back. We did not just spend 20 minutes talking about Coach bags just between the two of us.
Look,
it's so fun.
It's an obsession.
It really is. It really is.
An obsession that I feel like I don't indulge in as much as I used to. So I'll give myself a break.
Yeah, that's right.
It's fine.
That's right. All right. So we're going to talk a little bit about how Coach was in the early aughts and then now how it's shifted into what it is now, because I feel like this fall especially it's had a huge comeback with online with TikTok, and like I can't tell you how many influencers I saw get the Brooklyn hobo bag. Like it's so many In 2001, Britney Spears and Justin Timberlake are wearing double denim on the red carpet.
As we all know.
Good times. Ken and Barbie, if you will. While Dior, Louis Vuitton, and Coach are battling it out for the title of the It Bag. 20 years later, the denim unfortunately still haunts us. But the Dior saddlebag and the Louis Vuitton monogram still retain something of their iconic status. Mm. Coach, however, almost totally disappeared. 1 minute, its distinctive CC embroidery was being flaunted by the likes of Ashley Tisdale, Ashley Benson, and Hilary Duff. Mm. The next, it was frowned upon as outdated and tacky.
Rude.
But now, I mean, we just said, but now it's 2022 and social media is swamped with inevitable snaps of a revamped signature tabby and the archival swinger bags. So where did Coach go wrong? How did they bounce back? Arguably even better than before. I love this article so far.
It's very dramatic.
So as we know, Coach was founded in 1941. Fast forward to 2001, the brand launches its Coach signature collection featuring the bold double C design that put the early 2000s into a chokehold. And when I tell you, every person I saw yes. with a designer bag had the double C design, mm-hmm. I'm not kidding.
Or just whatever monogram of the brand, right. Even if it wasn't well known.
Michael Kors still
does it too.
Michael Kors
is also another iconic one, yes.
Yeah. So, it was monogrammed all over, chunky shoulder bags, wristlets, baguette bags, envied by both red carpet celebrities and the general public alike.
Bread bags.
The label refused to pull away from its clean-cut, preppy aesthetic. For some time, it seemed like Coach was on top of the world as a trailblazer of affordable luxury. But its popularity was also its poison. It didn't take long for Coach to become just a little too ubiquitous, and neither did it help that the label refused to pull away from its clean-cut preppy aesthetic as its attention skyrocketed. Soon enough, the Coach Signature Collection lost most of its aspirational appeal as an it bag and settled into the suburban sensibility that left much of the industry questioning why it even made it to the red carpet in the first place. And yet, Coach refused to march to the graveyard of the early 2000s nostalgia without a fight. Since the early 2010s, the label has been implementing and revamping its classic slouchy shapes into modern structure and silhouettes, toning back the monograms with refined
subtlety,
thank you, and has brought a touch of class back to the brand's reputation. Fashion forward ambassadors for a brand new generation have helped inject energy back into the Coach images, with Selena Gomez announced as ambassador in 2016, followed by Jennifer Lopez in 2019. However, it was arguably the crazed resurgence of the Y2K fashion that has since taken the industry by storm and really helped fuel Coach's comeback. So, it first started with Paris Hilton, the ultimate Y2K icon, and her Coach campaign in 2020, which celebrated the relaunch of the classic swinger bag. It was sleek, it was subtle, and it even saw the monogram print resurface, this time broken up between black panels of neutral colors like cream and brown, sparking renewed interest in Coach's classic CC embroidery. What is happening over there?
Oh my God. Sorry. He was like digging in my hair and then he sneezed in my face and then got spooked.
Oh my God.
Sorry. There's a lot going on over here.
Lynx is on one today.
Son, sorry if he deleted half of your thing.
No,
I don't even
fine.
Know what he did.
he's good. We're good. Whew. Okay, so then came the bag that really broke the internet, the pillow tabby, which enough structure to be branded as modern and just enough puffy, pillowy dreamness to send back waves of early 2000s nostalgia. The pillow tabby treads the perfect balance between old and new and has helped launch Coach back into the spotlight. Complete with its signature C-latch closure, the pillow tabby is the perfect example of Coach's rebranded shift towards minimalism, still playing around with the youthful splashes of color to keep the label thinking fresh but classic.
Agreed. I do think it does both of those things.
Yes.
Even though I wouldn't personally carry one, I think it's very teenage college.
It's feel. Perfect. Yeah.
It is perfect.
Coach is often seen as on par with other high-end New York labels like Tory Burch and Tommy Hilfiger. Classy in its elegance and tempting in its nostalgia, there's no doubt that it's been a bumpy ride, but Coach's comeback is sure to be one for the history books. The Pillow Tabby is now the latest contender for the title of It Bag. Still up against old rivals like Dior, this time, however, something tells us Coach will be here to stay.
I would agree. I hope so. I really like it.
Me too. So now we move on to the portion of if you are find yourself in a secondhand store slash thrift store and you're looking at a bag that looks like it's made of leather, how can you tell if it's a Coach bag and how can you tell if it's quality?
Fair.
All right. So here we go. You have a bag from the early to mid 1960s. If there's no serial number.
Oh, helpful.
Thickest leather grain impression of Coach logo, late early. Okay, so the Coach Creed is printed in all caps on the logo and it or on like the inside little panel thing. This is a Coach bag. It is made out of completely natural glove tanned cowhide. The scars, scratches, veins, and wrinkles are natural characteristics of full grain leathers. Okay, that is what it will say. The Creed, there should be gaps in between the words, scars, scratches, veins, and wrinkles. Under the Creed in all caps, it's printed made in New York City, USA. No serial number. The Coach logo is stamped above the Creed and the word leatherware is printed in all caps under the word Coach within the logo. All bags that featured the Creed but no serial number were manufactured in the original Coach factory in New York City.
And are probably very sought after by collectors.
Yes. And worth a lot of money. So if you go to an estate sale and you see some lady giving away her Coach bag and it's
take
this,
a look.
Then it's early. It's early Coach. Okay. So from the mid to late 1970s, you will see that the Coach Creed is printed made in the United States or made in the USA, but not both and not in New York City. This changes because Coach began to manufacture their bags in other locations in the United States. The serial number exists and contains seven numbers in the format of three digits, a dash, and then four digits, like a phone number. Okay. The serial number is unique to each bag and does not correspond with the style number. A few styles feature made in the USA printed under the Creed and have several serial numbers that consist of eight numbers without a dash.
Super helpful.
Yes. Now, if your Coach bag was made in the 1980s, the Coach Creed is the same as in the mid to late 70s. The serial number contains seven numbers in the format of four numbers and then a dash with three numbers. Both the first four digits before the dash and the last three digits after the dash are unique to each bag and do not correspond with the style number.
Nice.
Now, in 1994, conveniently the year I was born,
woo!
The Creed printed in all caps reads, "This is a Coach bag. It was handcrafted in country of origin of completely natural glove tanned cowhide. The variations in the grain are characteristic of natural full grain leather. There are no gaps between any of the words in the Creed, and the serial number has a three-digit dash four-digit format."
Goodness, talk about a run-on sentence.
"The first three characters before the dash indicate the month, year, and location in which the bag was manufactured. The first and third characters are letters, and the second character is a numeral."
It hurts my brain.
"The four numbers," it's like a weird word problem.
I know, right?
"The four numbers after the dash indicate the bag's style number." So for example, the serial number would be F5D-9966. The F is the sixth letter of the alphabet, which indicates that the bag was manufactured during the sixth month of the year.
Okay.
June. Five represents the year during which the bag was manufactured. D indicates that the bag was manufactured in the United States. Thus, you can decipher from the first part of the serial number that the bag was manufactured in the United States during June of 1995.
Okay.
The letters,
about 2005?
I don't know.
About 2025?
The letters used to represent bags' countries of origin can vary. It's not crucial to consider this factor when determining the authenticity of a bag. Yeah. Before 1994, Coach assigned style numbers to bags, but did not include them in the bag's serial numbers. Therefore, you can find two bags that look the same, but one could have a serial number consisting of an arbitrary digits if it was manufactured before 1994, and the other could have serial numbers that indicate the style number if it's manufactured after 1994.
Nice and confusing, just the way I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, tips. You can be quite certain that the bag is authentic if you examine its creed and find either one, at least one misspelling, or two, is inauthentic. I said inauthentic, right?
I don't know.
Okay. So, it's inauthentic if there's a misspelling in the creed.
Of course.
At least one word or phrase is inconsistent with either of the two versions of the creed above.
Mm-hmm.
Both the size and the weight of the Coach Creed font vary. Depending on the bag's country of manufacture and age, the particular alignment of the creed can also vary. The creed may be justified, aligned, left, centered, justified with only the last line or otherwise. Therefore, these factors are not reliable indicators of authenticity. Some smaller Coach items do not have creeds, including wallets, pouches, cosmetic cases, and other small accessories. So yeah,
nice.
That's something to keep in mind. So yeah, so
go hunting. That's always fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what you need to know if you at your local thrift store, if you're lucky enough to find a bag of that mm-hmm. quality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And obviously this is just Coach. So if you hunt and you find a different type of luxury brand, you should also look up how you would verify that.
Totally.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's that.
What do you look for when you're looking for a new purse? Like, what are the kind of aspects that you would look for if you were really looking for one, you know?
So I think it would have, typically I like to have different styles for different things,
of
right?
Course.
So like, I'm not always looking for a day-to-day bag.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fortunate enough where I can have more than one, and it mm-hmm. doesn't have to be like my one and only mm-hmm. bag. So, but it does have to be functional, right?
Right.
So like, I think, for example, I was looking, my day-to-day like bag that I take to like Pilates and mm-hmm. ceramics and, you know, all that stuff, is just like a crossbody from Uniqlo, and it's like mm-hmm. a neoprene, like mm-hmm. Like rain jacket material. It's
right.
Nothing crazy, right? And it fits my phone, wallet, and a lip gloss. But like for work,
mm-hmm.
you know, I take a bigger bag. I have like one of those medium LL Bean totes.
Okay.
And it's a canvas material. It holds all my things. It holds stethoscope. It holds my lunch. It holds a water bottle. Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, it has to be functional, even if it's for a different thing. So like
right.
when I'm looking for a luxury bag, it still has to be functional. I think that's my right. first thing. Like I'm not into like the mini, like micro purses, you know,
no.
that we're really in
no.
for a while. I think you're spending, like for me, at least I'm spending too much money for it not to be useful, at
right.
least for me to wear on a regular night out, like mm-hmm. not, it can't just be for the fit. You know what I
right.
mean?
I agree.
And then I like to maybe pick, sometimes I like to pick colors that I wouldn't normally pick in a regular day. Like
fair.
I do have my classic black Coach mm-hmm. bag that I carry, but then I also have one that's like a beautiful, like orangey yellow color
mm-hmm.
that looks really mm-hmm. cute with summer outfits and like adds a little pop of color, because that's what accessories should do, right? They should add to the outfit.
Right.
Sometimes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think, and I like crossbody. I
yeah.
like bigger bags. I'm not a huge like small bag person.
Fair.
And I like to have my hands free. So
that's my biggest thing when getting a bag. Do I have to hold it? If the answer
right.
is yes, I am less likely to want it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I bought the Willow bag, not mm-hmm. the bucket bag, but like the regular one
mm-hmm.
from Coach. And it is small and it has like a little handbag. And it's cute when we go out for dinner or something
right.
where I don't have to like have my hands free, because then I can just hold my little bag and feel really dainty and cute. But it also has the crossbody option. So if I needed to, I could, you know, put it over my shoulder and it would be fine.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. I was just curious.
Yeah. What about you?
Say, I mean, I like color, but I often find myself, if I put too much color in the palette, I'm probably not going to use it as often because it's not as, like, it can't go with everything. But yes, crossbody at this point in my life is a must. I have to have a hands free. That drives me crazy, because I think it's because as a youth, we were all into the giant totes where you, instead of carrying a backpack like a normal person, we gave ourselves like shoulder problems.
Scoliosis.
Because we genuinely put every binder and book we owned in a tote that could not sustain that, and then just wore it on our shoulder for 8 hours a day walking to classes. Okay. Right. Like dum-dums.
No, you're so right. I remember buying those totes from like American Eagle or whatever. And putting like textbooks in them.
Yes. Yeah. Girl, my poor shoulders. And so now I'm like, I don't want to have to hold anything. I feel myself in stores when I used to have like the regular hand bag, because I wore a shoulder bag for a really long time. And it's like so impractical when you're shopping for groceries or looking at clothes or just going out and, I don't know, wanting to throw rocks at people. You can't do that with a shoulder bag. It just slips off. And I have weird shoulders. And so it never stayed on my shoulder either. So it just made more sense to do a crossbody. That's the
real, no, but that's the real conspiracy though. Like, are there girls out there who have shoulder bags that stay on their shoulders? Is that real?
I'm telling you, I did not have the shoulders, and I can verify there are some girls that have the shoulders. I'm not one of them. My shoulders slightly slope down. So no matter what I do, it never stays on my freaking shoulder. I have to hold it in place. Yeah. And that drives me bananas. So it's either, and the other thing is, not to go on a bag rant, I'm also not a huge fan of backpacks, because if I need to get to something, then I have to take off the backpack, sling it around the front, or I have to wear it on my front, which is kind of weird, unless you're in a park, I guess. But the crossbody is so natural because it's either on my hip and I can access everything right away, or if it's like the fanny pack style that I'm wearing, like a crossbody, it's already at the front of my chest and it's small and compact. And I just reach my hand in, grab what I need, and get on with my day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Practicality, I guess, is the end of all of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we're very practical people. I feel like we just need to have that
efficiency.
I was under the impression that like the shoulder bag thing is adjacent to the high heel thing, where like high heels, although they look nice, are not practical footwear.
Right.
And it's just a design to like make women run away slower or like whatever they say, you know,
maybe.
But then the shoulder bag is just another design by men that like didn't quite,
I mean,
you know, when you make the cut, but maybe that's not true.
Maybe I that's don't not know. True. I feel like shoulder bags are for somewhat, I mean, now we're getting into like other aspects, I guess, but it's worth talking about. Backpacks, in my opinion, also leave yourself open to somebody coming out there and just unzipping your bag and taking something out of it. That's concerning. The shoulder bag, they can easily come up from behind and slip it off your shoulder. And before you've had a chance to grab it with your hand, it's already gone.
I feel like 9 times out of 10, every robbery that we've ever seen on shoulder TV, bag. It's a shoulder bag.
And so with my technique of having it, first of all, in the front, that also means the clip that holds it together is in the front. So they also just can't come up behind me. Plus, if they try to take it, it's physically attached to me and my hands can come up and grab it against my chest.
Right.
So like, if we're then talking about practicality in that way, totally, you know, don't do it for the fashion. I'm a practical person.
Yeah. Well, and I just, you know, I've never met anyone that a shoulder bag was like their go-to.
Yeah.
Except for my mom, maybe like back in the day, but even then, like now she doesn't even.
My mom uses a backpack. She uses the lounge flies.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and in her defense also, it's more practical when you have kids to have a larger bag, but also less practical to have your hands full with a tote when you have kids. So it makes sense that you would need something large and efficient.
Yeah.
I will say there are some brands that I'm not gravitating towards anymore. and I'm sure you may have the same. I used to be a huge Kate Spade person.
I know. I've received a gift of Kate Spade from you.
But here's the problem I have with Kate Spade compared to Coach, if I may. I've owned many a Coach wallet and many a Coach bag, none of which have disassembled themselves from use. Like if I wanted to, all the items I have could completely usable right now. Right.
Right.
Kate Spade, I cannot say the same. I had a crossbody bag and I had it for less than a year, and the strap unglued itself and completely fell apart. And because it was glued and then stuck into the hole, there was nothing, like no metal holding it together on the inside. Yeah. So there was no repairing it unless you went back and they re-glued it.
Right.
Which I felt for almost identical price that they sell the Coaches at makes zero sense.
Is it? I was under the impression Kate Spade is a little less.
It might be, but they're somewhat comparable because I remember going like between the, at least the Maryland stores. Now, granted, they were outlets at the time. So obviously that factors hugely.
But yeah, they're comparable. Yeah.
They're still like $100 to $200 bags, depending on how big they are.
And what, I also will say, just like holding the Kate Spade versus holding a Coach, there's a definite difference in like quality just based on like weight. And not to say that one is heavy or anything, but like you can tell like which one is more well made.
Yes.
And Kate Spade, may she rest in peace. She's makes beautiful bags, but like it's just not the same quality.
I want the trend and the quality. I want it to be cute, functional, affordable-ish, but also quality.
Well, in today's day and age too, like nobody has a lot of money to spend.
No.
And the thing is, I want pieces that are going to last me until I'm 60 years old. Like I don't want stuff that I'm going to have to throw away in, in like 10 years, if that, you know,
I want
something that I'm going to be able to keep forever. You know, granted that my size is similar, you know what I mean?
Right. No, I agree with you. I think there, and there's like tiers, right? There's of course super affordable. You've got these mid-range options, and then you have the complete luxury brands. I don't need a complete luxury brand because that thing is going to be used and ran through the dirt because I'm a practical person.
Right.
So if I buy the bag, best be assured it's not sitting in my closet with lights on top of it. Now, if that's you and you're a collector and you have the money to do that,
that's
by
fine.
All freaking means, but I got to be able to use the bag and hope that the money I spent and invested in it is going to last me a long time. Yeah. I just don't feel that way about Kate Spade anymore.
This is why I agree.
Yeah.
This is why I like the Birkin lore.
Yeah.
Have you heard this? Yes. So this is not new information by any means, but it was going around on TikTok for a while and I've heard mixed opinions, but so legend has it that Jane Birkin, the woman who Hermes designed the Birkin bag for, used the Birkin in a very practical carry-all way. And she filled it up to the brim. She used it, you know, as her everyday whatever bag. Now, I've heard conflicting stories that she loved the bag and that's why she used it so rigorously and so like, and she wore it in, you know?
Yeah.
I've also heard that she actually hated the bag because it didn't fit all her stuff.
That's great.
And that's why you, when you see photos of it, she's, it's always like overflowing and there's like crap everywhere. Right.
Sure.
So I don't know. Who knows? Right. No one.
What about the Olsen twins that do the same?
Right. Yeah.
It's great. They use their very luxury brand. I think they are Birkins, if I'm not mistaken, but they fill them to the top. And if you see photos of them carrying their bags, they're using them as bags.
Yeah. Right.
I love that.
And this is what I'm talking about. These are, this is what I like. This is relatable. Yes. Even though the bag itself is like $30,000.
Right.
Plus it's like a used car.
Right. It's still a
purse. At least they're using it. Yeah. Right. And they're like not putting it on a shelf to collect dust, you know, or like in a airtight space to collect. And I get that people collect and that's fine. Like do what you want to do.
Whatever is in your budget.
I feel like it's more fun, in my opinion, to like wear things and use them as they're meant to be used instead of just like creating this, like, if I had a place to go, I would wear it, you know, right. That kind of thing.
That's the same. And you know what? This is the same similar conversation we had about the china, the like the fine china.
Yes.
Just use the china. Just use it. Yes, it's beautiful. Just but dang, if I don't want to just have meat and potatoes on it. Okay. That's what I want to do.
Right.
I will eat the hot dog on the fine china because it's beautiful and should be celebrated in its use.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
This is lovely.
So that is my take on designer handbags. I hope you enjoyed it.
We should do all the designers at some point. That would be super fun.
I'm playing with the idea of making it a series. We might delve into it on my new segment, which you guys will hear more about in the new year.
So exciting.
We'll talk about it some more, but yeah, so I don't know. We'll see how we do. I like having these conversations though. It's very fun. I like learning about the origins of fashion and like how quality is, you know, made and like all these other things. So anyway, that being said, feel free to send us an email with any questions, comments, concerns, or episode topic suggestions, mediacontentpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Instagram, follow us on TikTok while you still can. And
before doomsday.
Right. And then don't forget to rate us 5 stars anywhere you listen to podcasts, and on YouTube, give us a like and subscribe. We're there. We're going to be there more in the new year. We'll tell you guys about that more later on. So if you like this, just, you know, tell us you liked it. That's all.
Please.
We'll see you next week. This has been Mediocre Content.
Thanks so much for listening. Cheers.
Cheers. We'll be right back.